fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
All right, so this is Part-Time Fanboy, and I am here with Corey Blake and Paul Edwards, and I am Christian Horn. Corey Blake from the Comics Observer and Robot 6, and Paul and Christian from just nothing
just
else.
Here.
We're just here. But wait, before we get started on like the subject that we wanted to talk about, which Paul kind of, you know, started last week, I want to talk about this poll. Corey, did you listen to last week's episode at all, or probably not? Okay, thanks.
Sorry.
That's awesome. But anyway, no, but Paul said that you kind of did a poll on your site about...
Oh, yes. Well, yeah. Robot 6, actually.
Oh, on Robot 6. Now, was that you doing the poll, or was it Robot 6 doing the poll? Or
I did it. Well, it was sort of inspired by Kurt Busiek, the writer who...
Yeah.
Who did
that.
Sort of an informal poll. Somebody on Twitter had said, Kurt Busiek and... Who's the artist? Steve Lieber, I think. Would be great if he if they did a what was it, like a jungle? I think it was like a jungle lost world sort of Kazar. It'd be awesome if they did a Kazar Savage Land book.
Yeah.
And then on Twitter, Kurt Busiek responded to him and just to his people in the universe in general, saying, "Is it Kazar and the Savage World specifically that you want, or would any, you know, would something, if we created a world like that, would you be into that?" And he was just sort of like wondering, like, oh, what is the pull? What's sparking this person's interest? Is it does it have to be in the Marvel Universe, or do you just want to see us handle that world? You know, or do you need to have Spider-Man swing by every year or something? So I thought that was an interesting sort of, you know, theoretical discussion, and so I posted about it on Robot 6 and kind of opened it up more generally to what attracts readers to books. Is it characters, or is it the creators?
Yeah.
And of course, you know, we're speaking hypothetically, so naturally it's a pretty loose it's not a scientific poll.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was interesting. I expected a lot more people to say characters, like, you know, I've been following Spider-Man for, you know, my whole life and that sort of thing. But it was actually basically the majority was saying creators first is what drew them to books.
Wow.
And other things would matter too. You know, they'd say, well, obviously it would matter about, you know, the story or the high concept or just the general pitch of the book. And you know, so there was a lot of extenuating circumstances, but it seemed like a lot of times creators is what was driving people, which I thought I liked that. That was actually good news to me.
Yeah, yeah, I think I agree with you. And I also think, like, Paul and I talked a little bit about it last week because Paul mentioned it. And I tried to look through your site, comicsobserver.com, but I couldn't find it, so I just posted a link to your site. But is that on Comics Observer, that poll, or is it Robot? It's just Robot 6. Like, do you have a link?
Yeah, it's just Robot 6.
Oh, cool. Send me the link to that poll, though, like, because I want to post it, too. I mean, I'm sure it's wrapped up, but so people can...
Yeah.
And I'm sure anybody who's interested has probably already seen it on Robot 6, but whatever, a little link on our site can't hurt. But that's interesting because, I mean, that's probably going to tie into what we're talking about today. I think that's what's going on with me too, is if I see a creator is doing something, and they're one of my favorites, I definitely will kind of like tack it up on the board in my head, you know, and say, oh, I got to check that out.
Right.
I don't know if it gets me to pick up weekly books, like a weekly comic, but once it's collected, you know, I will definitely look at that, you know, right? So,
yeah,
I think
with probably with us, I would imagine there are certain characters that we probably always have a, like for me, New Warriors will always be something like, if a New Warriors book comes out, I'd be like, you know, and I'll look.
Yeah.
You know, I just, you know, but, and then I'll read it for, maybe I'll check it out and read it for a little while, but to me, that's kind of the exception, you know, primarily it's, is it somebody who has an interesting voice or an interesting voice through their art, and And then what, you know, what's the story about, you know, what's the kind of the high concept, and then, you know, and what's buzz, maybe, you know, if I'm on the fence, I'll kind of see what other people are saying.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree with that. Once again, it's interesting that you mentioned that, yeah, there are always going to be characters that you're kind of, because I think there was a rumor that Scott Snyder might be writing Superman soon or something like that. And yeah. I liked what he was doing with the 52 relaunch of Batman. It was the only thing that I thought was really, really solid in that 52 relaunch. And I was like, I wonder if I should, on my minuscule pull list, like once he starts, I wonder if I should check that out, because obviously I like Scott Snyder and obviously I like Superman. So for me, it might be like a marriage made in heaven, you know, so I don't know. And speaking of Kurt Busiek, that was another guy when he was writing Superman or Action or something years ago, I picked that up just because I like Kurt Busiek a lot. That's cool. Yeah, so that's probably going to tie in a little bit to what we're talking about. And I guess the subject for this week is Paul set down the challenge of finding three current graphic novels or comic books that we're all really excited about, and saying what it is that we really like about them and why we like them. So I don't know, why don't I start with you guys, and since Paul hasn't been chatting so much, let's start with Paul. Paul, start with your first pick.
Cool.
What is your first pick?
Yeah, my first pick is a book called Orc Stain.
Ah! Okay, go ahead. That was one of my runner-ups, but go ahead.
Yeah, Orc Stain is by a guy named James Stokoe, I believe. And he
James,
is
yes,
one of the
Stokoe,
most
yeah.
unbelievably detailed artists that I've ever seen. He's like a sort of a cross between Jason Burroughs and Mobius. He's got a really, really interesting style. And is the collected book published through Image?
It's Image. The comic is through Image. And Yeah,
it started off as a web comic, I think.
Really?
An independent produced comic, and I know that he does put pages out on the web sometimes. Really interesting book. There's just nothing else like it out there. It follows this orc who doesn't really have a name. I think they call him One Eye. There's just a really crazy plot to it. It's this wild sort of rollicking fantasy story that sort of reminds me in a lot of ways of like a really more violent ElfQuest. It's funny. It's exciting, and like I said, there's just nothing else like it. And it's so visually interesting. I mean, just looking every single panel that he draws is just full of these amazing details and depth. And when I first saw it, I was just blown away by the art, and then the story was just as good.
Yeah. I mean, I gotta say, it was one of my runner-ups, and the only reason that I didn't pick it is because I have the trade. I finally got the trade, and I haven't had a chance to read it yet. But I actually reviewed one of the issues for Ain't It Cool a while ago, and they sent it to us in PDF. And they get a list every once in a while, and they're like, "Hey, who wants to review these indie books?" And I saw the name Orcstain, and I was like, okay, that sounds interesting. I'll try that. And I have to say that my review basically consisted of how much I hate James Stokoe. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, because he's so awesome that it makes me just envious of every. I mean, he writes, he draws, he letters, and he colors the whole thing. And it's some crazy, like, Dungeons and Dragons madness, insane, like, yeah, like almost like you said, ElfQuest. It's awesome. The guy's insane.
Have you seen his Godzilla book?
Oh my God, no! Is that out or like what?
He's doing a limited series called Godzilla: The Half Century War.
Are you kidding me?
And his version of Godzilla is unbelievably cool.
Is that coming? Is that like out or coming out or?
I don't know. I saw a page on it on IO9. And I was just blown away. I mean,
it's, wow.
He's just the perfect artist to do Godzilla.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I would think I'm gonna have to look that up. What's that called again? Godzilla what?
It's called Godzilla: The Half Century War.
Oh, and I have to say, I've got the trade right now on my desk because I came prepared. And the colors on the PDF I remember were much more vibrant, but than the trade Greek. But still, the colors are amazing. And yeah, I mean, it looks like it's all hand lettered for the most part, and it's just like, yeah, this is one of those guys that you just look at his work and it's just like, oh, forget it, I give up, why am I even trying, you know? It's just, this guy, it's awesome. Orc Stain,
Godzilla Half Century War is out right now. Number one is out right now. It's by IDW.
Wow, great minds think alike. Awesome. That's so cool. I love this book. I can't believe that you and I are on the same page about that. I mean, I do believe it, but I'm just saying that you picked it because it seems so obscure. Because the trade was hard to find, and then they actually reissued it recently because it was going for like $100 on Amazon. Like, wow. You couldn't get the trade, yeah, and they finally just can't reissued it, so that's awesome. Oh, cool. So, Orc Stain. We could do a whole thing on, like, a whole episode on Orc Stain, I think. But anyway, Corey, what's your first pick?
My first one, I'm going to go with Anya's Ghost by Vera Brosgel.
Uh-huh.
And she actually did, she worked on the animation team for the animated movie that just came out. Paranorman.
Oh, great movie.
Yeah, that was fun.
And I think this Anya's Ghost is actually better than the movie, although the movie was fun, but this is just so good. It just won a few awards, and it's about a girl who is going to school, and she's kind of not one of the cool kids. And there's this, she falls down like a well in the beginning, and sort of sprains her arm, and there's a ghost at the bottom, and they become sort of friends, and the ghost kind of follows her home, and she nobody else can of course see the ghost, so she seems kind of crazy, but the art style is just wonderful. You can see that she's comes from an animation world, but the storytelling is so clear and strong, and I don't want to sort of ruin the twist that happens.
Don't do it.
But the friendship, the relationship between the two, the ghost and Anya, is really well done, and what is discovered as it goes through, as you progress through it, you're suddenly like, wait a minute.
Oh,
it's
really?
It's really good. It's really handled well, and it's done. I mean, it's very kind of all ages feel.
It looks great. I'm looking at some of the panels right now.
Yeah, yeah. The art. I mean, her style is so wonderful. I love it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking at the pages too, and that it does look really nice. Is it black and white mostly? Black and white.
Yeah.
The blurb from Neil Gaiman on her cover. Very nice.
A masterpiece, says Neil Gaiman.
yeah, Neil Gaiman, yeah, okay.
And Scott McCloud and Hope Larson.
I mean, it looks great. It looks really pretty. Who's putting this out? What book?
That's
looking
first
at the
second.
Oh, which, first second, okay.
And they're a great publisher. I really like them, yeah.
Oh, wow, that's cool. I'm going to have to check this out. I'm adding it to my wish list right now so I can save it. That's cool. So what age range would you recommend? I mean, obviously adults can read it, but is this for maybe younger kids or slightly older?
I would say like teens probably.
Oh, okay.
It's listed 12 and up for under the LA Times book review.
Gotcha. Right. Oh, yeah, okay, cool. Right. Yeah, 12 and up. Yeah. Oh, great.
Adult. It's definitely a YA, young adult vibe to it.
Oh, okay, cool. I'm going to check that out because that looks really good. I may have to pick that up. Oh, more comics to read that I didn't know about. Good deal. So my first pick is going to be Gorillas, and it is spelt gorillas as in like gorillas that fight in the jungle, and it's from Oni Press, and it's by a brilliant, amazing artist named Bram Revell. I may be pronouncing it wrong, but and you could check out his stuff at lrevell.com comicbookcompany.com. And this is a book that I discovered at Comic-Con maybe last year. It's two graphic novels so far. And basically, the thing that got me into it is the cover is a chimpanzee, an ape or something, you know, wearing like combat fatigues, like, you know, soldier's uniform type of thing. And it's monkeys, gorillas, apes, mammals fighting in the Vietnam War. And if that premise doesn't just suck you in right away, reading through it, it's an amazing book. I mean, this is one of the best books that I've picked up in a long time. I love this guy's art, but it starts off, you pick up the book and you're like, oh, monkeys in Vietnam. Like, that's awesome. Like, that idea, that's a winner right there. It's going to be hysterical. And then it's just, you start reading through it and it becomes so much deeper than that. Like, it's not, you know, like DC Comics, just add monkeys, you know, like, yeah, in the 50s, yeah. You know, it's just so much, becomes so much deeper than that. And a big chunk of it is, you know, the US military has been experimenting by using apes, you know, in the Vietnam War. You know, to use it instead of soldiers, and obviously something goes wrong, but what it ends up being, it becomes, you know, and they have to, what they have to do is get, obviously things go awry, the gorillas escape, and, you know, they're trouncing through the jungles of Vietnam, you know, gone AWOL or whatever, and then they have to send a troop of humans, you know, to follow them, to recapture them, and it kind of becomes an exploration of, you know, man and war, and like, why are we doing this, and what is the whole thing, what is the point of war, and what is the point of man, and it just gets really much deeper than I thought it ever could have. And and I definitely reviewed both books for Ain't It Cool, and, you know, I put it up there against Apocalypse Now, you know, Platoon, just as a, you know, I mean, it's got gorillas in it, okay, fine, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. Planet of the Apes or whatever, but it's pretty, it's much headier than I thought it was going to be, you know what I mean? And it surprised me. And this guy, Bram Revell, his artwork, it's all brush and, you know, gray tones, obviously, in Photoshop, but, and I believe, not hand-lettered, but, you know, hand-ballooned and stuff like that, but it's just so well done. It's just so, and he's apparently done storyboarding for some films. I'd never heard of the guy before, but I highly recommend this. This is a book that gets me excited about comics, and you guys got to check it out. It's one of my favorites.
The second volume just came out.
Yeah, I picked that up at Comic-Con. I saw it, and I met the guy, and I want to get him for an interview because I'm just so impressed with him. And he was so modest at Comic-Con because I met him. He signed the second book, and it was one of those things. You know when you have comics where it's like the second book comes out, and you're like, done. I don't need to know anything else about it than that it's out. It's that type of thing, you know. So that's my first pick is Gorillaz. I really love it, and I highly recommend it. So I don't know. That's I can't go on enough about it. It's, if you were to, I could do a whole hour on that alone. But
I'm looking at his website right now, the elbell.com.
Yeah.
He has an incredibly effective GIF on his on the top of his page.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
That too, yeah.
Yeah.
Scroll down to the bottom of that page and there's a picture of Mrs. Kirby that's like, whoa.
Yeah. It's just, it's awesome. It's his work is so good.
There's something in comics that I don't really see a lot in other art forms where they sort of start with this. I mean, in the case of this, is essentially a pun, you know, like gorillas that are gorillas.
Mm-hmm.
And then they take the concept dead serious and really dig into and find a rich world to explore.
Yeah.
I think that's awesome. Like, I don't know. You don't really see that a lot in, like, you know, like in novels or movies.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, and I feel like it seems something that would be low concept, like when you first look at it, oh, it's going to be monkeys, and you're going to have guns, and it's going to, hijinks will ensue, and then once you get into it, it's so much higher concept than what you thought was what it was going to be, and it's deceiving. Just, and that pun, like you said, sort of makes you think that, oh, it's just going to be like this silly little book, and it's not at all. And then when you
look at the art, you get a sense that, like, wait, if it were playing for the laughs, the art would be sillier.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really good. And Paul, you know how, like, last week you were saying, oh, Vertigo, you know, this would be something that I could see Vertigo doing.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? Like, big time. This is something that I could see being a Vertigo book in its own way. But it's through Oni, and I can't recommend it enough. It just blew me away. So, Paul, what's your number two?
My number two is a book that's going to be coming out soon. Right now it's serialized on Boing Boing. It's called The Hip Hop Family Tree. And it's by Ed Pisker.
Uh-huh.
And man, this is it's done every week, I think, like sort of like a Sunday edition funnies, you know.
Uh-huh.
And the visual style sort of looks like it belongs in a newspaper too. But it's a history of hip hop from the beginning in New York, and it's just incredibly entertaining. He manages to tell, like, just an interesting little story every installment, and it's one of those things where I really can't wait to see this in a book, because I think that the whole will be a lot greater than, you know, the parts are. But the parts are really, really fun right now. He just sort of nails each person's distinctive look. It's, you know, he gets the rhythm of the language. He really makes me feel like I'm in New York, you know, in the, you know, what, late 70s through early 80s. You know, it's just a great sort of snapshot of a time and place, and I just can't wait for this book to come out.
Wow! So this is a web comic. I'm looking at the artwork on boingboing.net, and it's really nice. I like it a lot.
Yeah. It's right now it's serialized on Boing Boing. I don't know if he's putting it out in any other way, but they are going to be compiling it into a book. And,
oh wow! If you scroll down, you can see this like huge tree that he's mapping, that he's building.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really interesting.
It's just totally fascinating, and it's one of those things too where, you know, you can sort of. You can spend, you know, just a little bit of time looking at, you know, this week's panel or whatever, but, you know, or you could just spend hours sort of digging through it and, you know, looking up things. You know, he'll bring up sort of these little characters that you're kind of like, oh, yeah, I remember that guy, you know, or I remember that group, you know, I just find myself spending, you know, way too much time, you know, on this thing, you know, just because it sucks me in, and it sucked me in from the first panel that I saw, and it's just really immersive. That's the only word that I can really sort of describe it with.
Wow, it's really cool, you know, this is such an odd way to do like a web comic. It's like the post, and then you've got the panel, and then you have to click through. And the latest page is taking forever to load for me. I don't know why.
Yeah, it can depending on, you know, the site. That's unfortunately, you know, Boing Boing sort of a heavy traffic site, you know.
Uh-huh.
So you can hit a bit of a delay there, but you know, the Ed Pisker is really a very talented artist. I know
he's
that Miguel was the person who sort of really, like, got me. First person who I've had sort of discussion with about him, because he had gone to his panel at Comic-Con, and you know, I guess he did one about a hacker. He just put out a graphic novel about a hacker called, I think, Fizzywig or something like that.
Wizzywig, yeah, I have that.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, he's got a very unusual style, because it's sort of, in a way, I guess, Harvey Pekar-esque, because it's sort of documentary. He's like a documentary cartoonist.
Yeah.
And I just really like that. I don't really see a lot of things like that, you know, on the newsstand, you know. But
yeah.
But it's just a really cool idea, and it's incredibly well executed.
Yeah, this is sweet. How many pages has he done on this?
Gosh, I don't know.
Gosh, because it seems like that's the only thing that might turn me off a little bit is like having to go through every post and like click through and then the loading mm-hmm. time. But it looks like it would be worth it because the artwork is so.
Yeah, I and mean, like I said, once this thing's so out nice. In a, once this thing's out in a book, you know,
it's going
like,
to be huge.
That's where it's really going to shine. Too.
Yeah, this is going to be huge when it gets out in a book. I mean, I can't imagine this not finding the audience that it's specifically targeted for and just. Being like a sellout, like this is awesome. That's cool. Wow. Yeah, very nice. Good pick, Paul. That's sweet. I'm gonna have
yeah,
to.
Yeah, that's great. I love the nonfiction part of comics. Is I just love that yeah. is growing.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's so much potential, and there's so much that can be done through comics mm-hmm. in a nonfiction way that it's I love it.
This is gonna suck up so much of my time now. Like, this is awesome. Wow, that's great. So definitely. So Hip Hop Family Tree, boingboing.net. That is some sweet comic art. I love how he's just done like the retro sort of faded. Yeah. It's awesome, the faded yeah. old comic, you know, 70s, 80s comic sort of page, you know, style. Yeah, that's awesome.
It's been photoshopped to look like it's from that era.
Yeah, yeah, that's very sweet. Oh, wow. I wonder if he scanned like an old and then set it on multiply or, oh, I don't know. No, because then all the whites would be, yeah, I don't know. That's, whatever he's doing, it's really cool. Anyway, so Corey, what's your number two?
My number two is, you know, and it's kind of a little bit connected to the Gorillaz sort of where it starts off. This concept seems to start off from a joke, and then it's actually executed quite seriously. Uh-huh. This is called Elmer by Jerry Allen Guilin or something. I don't know. He's Korean, I believe.
Wait, what's it
Philippines,
called?
Philippines.
What was it
Elmer.
Called? Elmer. Oh, wow. Cool.
And this is a graphic novel, and it's basically what if one day chickens suddenly were as intelligent as humans?
Okay, you've got me.
And so, I mean, you know, and it's a very interesting sort of civil rights kind of parallel where all of a sudden chickens are, you know, trying to have day jobs, and they're walking around, and they have all these... You know, all these humans that are treating them badly because, you know, they used to eat them. And it's beautiful. I mean, the artwork is just really lush and very beautiful. And it's actually kind of, I mean, it's sad. I mean, by the end of it, you know, there's scenes where it's like, oh, my God, this is really quite moving.
Oh, wow. That looks great. I'm looking at it right now. So chickens one day just become like... Like human sentient, where yeah. do they talk?
Yeah, they talk. They have just like a person, you know.
Absolutely, I'm looking at one screaming, "Equal opportunity, my pink plucked flabby scabby ass."
I'm looking at a page right now, yeah, where there's a chicken talk. Ah, oh, that sounds awesome. That's perfect. Wow, that is just, and this just sort of seems like the sort of thing that only comics would do, you know? Yeah. Like, you would never see a TV show or a movie, or at least a movie with the budget that had the budget to handle something like talking chickens, take on this sort of thing, you know?
Right.
This has the best cover blurb I've ever seen.
What is the cover blurb? I'm trying to see the cover.
It's the great Filipino novel with chickens.
That's awesome. Yeah, that looks terrific. I mean... That makes me excited. See, it's stuff like this that you're not going to get in any other medium. Like, maybe a novel, sure. I could see, like, you know, like right. Animal Farm or whatever, obviously.
Sure.
But I'm just looking at a panel right now where there's a chicken in a suit.
Yeah, and, a business suit.
Yeah, and the chicken is saying, "It's because I'm a chicken, isn't it?"
Yeah.
I mean, that alone says it right there. That's brilliant. That is awesome.
Yeah, one
awesome.
Of the first scenes is he's going to an interview. He's trying to get a job, and they won't hire him.
Oh my God, that's so brilliant. Oh
my
God.
The main character is just this cranky guy who's just, you know, always just thinks the world's against him and that, you know, they're discriminated against. And he finds out, he learns about his parents and what they went through because it was his parents' generation when the chickens, you know, suddenly gain this intelligence.
Uh-huh.
And you learn kind of what they went through after the initial sort of the initial you know, the turn when all of a sudden it happened, and you know, the world kind of went into chaos because of the reliance that we have on chickens as food and as an industry.
Uh-huh.
So you know, it's there's total silliness and but it really digs into like, what would the world be like if we could not, if we had to treat chickens like humans?
Oh my gosh. And do they go into how it happened? Like, did it just happen one day?
Towards the end, they do reveal it. You know, his father's dying, so he goes to visit him, and you sort of, you know, through a series of flashbacks and him talking with his father, you kind of learn how it happened.
Oh wow! I mean, I don't want to spoil anything, but is it like gradual, or does it happen like overnight, where all of a sudden a chicken just starts talking?
Yeah, if I remember, because it has been a few months. I'm pretty sure it's just a moment where all of them suddenly it's sort of like there's some sort of, I think the theory is that it was some sort of airborne virus, you know, that's sort of like the
bird flu.
Flu, exactly, and all of a sudden they can all talk.
Oh my God, this just jumped to the top of my list of like things that I have to check out as soon as I'm done reading what I've been reading. Wow, that is awesome. That just makes me happy. That concept the fact that somebody thought that up and it's been published and it's out there in the world, like, that's beautiful. I'm gonna have to check this out. That is awesome. Oh man, I'm gonna have to. That's brilliant. Thank you, Corey, because sure. This looks awesome. That looks just great. That makes me happy. Okay, so my second book is something, again, another Oni Press book. I don't know why all of a sudden it seems like Oni Press. I mean, they've always been a really good publisher, but they've got two books out right now that really get me excited. It's called The Sixth Gun.
Oh, yeah.
And I love this book. Have you read this book, Corey?
I read the first trade. It was good. It was good.
Yeah, I have the first two, and I've got to pick up the third. I just saw that the third is out. And basically, it's a Western, and the concept is that there are six guns that have mystical qualities. And I guess through whatever hundreds of thousands of years, if I can remember the concept correctly, because it's been a while since I read these two trades, that there have been six weapons throughout history, throughout millions and millions of years, and they've all had mystical qualities, and they've all had people chasing after them, and this time they happen to be six guns, and each gun has its own sort of mystical properties and what they can do, and like magical powers, and the sixth gun is probably the most, I guess, lethal or powerful one of all, and unfortunately I can't remember exactly what the sixth gun does right now, but it's basically sort of it reminds me a little bit of Indiana Jones, where it's like a group of people and they're all trying to get these artifacts, and you've got, you know, a couple of like two different parties like just on the race for them, and it mixes like horror and Western and action and all these things into one really great package, and when I read the first trade, I was like, I'm in. All I had to see was the cover of the first trade, and I was like, ooh, what is this? And you know, I picked it up and I started leafing through it, and I bought it almost immediately, and now that I see that the third trade is out, but there's a lot of really good characters. The first trade has a really good villain, because there's an ex-Civil War general who used to own the gun, and supposedly he's dead, but you've got this group of like his widow runs a group of like really creepy characters trying to find the sixth gun, and you know, you've got the good guys who are trying to stop him from getting the sixth gun, and then by the end of the first trade there's this giant showdown, you know, between the good guys and the bad guys trying to stop, you know, the villain from procuring it. And it's just a really solid book, and the guy who is the artist is Brian Hurt, and I just love his style, and that's Hurt with two T's, and it just impressed me so much. And his site is the Hurt Locker with two T's, so it's the hurtlocker.blogspot.com, and he's just a fantastic, you know, artist, cartoonist, and I really love his stuff, but also the writing by Cullen Bunn is just fantastic, and I can't say enough about it. I just really like this book, and it's really solid, and it's one of those things that, again, so many different concepts mashed into one thing that you could see a feature film trying it, but like Cowboys versus Aliens or something, probably failing horribly, you know. But I could see this as like an HBO show or something, you know. It would be really, really, really fun, you know. And the artwork is, like I said, it's a little bit sort of like an animation style. It doesn't get too gritty, so I could see like maybe young, like teenage boys kind of really liking this. But I gotta say, I just loved the characters, I loved the story, and if you like westerns and you like horror and you like, you know, action, this is the book for you. I can't, and it comes out regularly, but there's three trades, and as I'm pretty much, you know, what I like to call a trade warrior these days, I love The Sixth Gun. I think it's, I've been picking up the trade, so I'll be picking up that third book as soon as I can. So definitely on the top of my list.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Paul, so what's your number three?
My number three got canceled.
Oh, what is it?
It's the new 52 ended up canceling it. My number three was the return of an old Milestone book called Zombie, but spelled with an X.
Oh, cool.
Zombie with an X, and it was my favorite Milestone book. It's been canceled twice here, but it's just a really entertaining superhero book. The creator is a guy named John Rossum. Uh-huh. Dennis Cowan did the art, part of the art back when they were doing the Milestone things, and they relaunched it, and it was written again by John Rossum, again illustrated by Fraser Irving. Great concept that I can't believe was done back in the 90s, of a scientist who's looking for a way to regenerate tissue. He's working with essentially nanobots. That
those
end
nanobots.
Up. Yeah, yeah. I can't believe
everything.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but you know, back in the 90s, that was just like, you know, amazing. It was like, it was like, wow, this is the future. But you know, he ends up with these nanobots that are in his bloodstream, and essentially, what he is now is he's immortal. He's indestructible. He can't get sick. He can instantaneously heal, but he needs other organic matter to instantly heal him. So if he's hurt, the nanobots will use whatever is close to him to repair his body. And unfortunately, in the first case of the first issue, it's the they use the body of the person, one of his coworkers, who he had feelings for, and it's just, you know, it sort of devastates him, you know, because like he's, you know, he's this, it's definitely, you know, sort of a superhero at a cost, but instantly he's sort of thrown into this very strange world, a world that's not just sort of scientific, but there's all these supernatural things that are going on. It's got a really weird sense of humor. There's another superhero in there called Catholic Girl, who is a teenage Catholic school girl who can fly and project a force field when she recites the Hail Mary.
Shut your mouth! Really?
I'm serious. She works with a nun called the Nun of the Above, who's a clairvoyant nun. And then there's another nun, I think, who's in the same religious order called Nonetheless. There's just sort of a little silliness that runs through it that reminds me of sort of the, you know, sort of 60s comic books, in that it doesn't take itself, you know, completely seriously, but at the same time, there are actual stakes for the characters. And you know, and it manages to work in almost every, you know, religious, you know, train of thought or mythology or, you know, it's just a huge world that he managed to create with this character. And when he had come back to, and done the second series, you know, started the second series, it's like he didn't really, you know, it's like it picked up in a way where the other one had left off like all those years ago. And, you know, sad but that it's canceled again. But, you know, hey, maybe since he's indestructible, he'll come back again.
Wait, so because I've heard other people talk about this book, and are all those concepts from the 90s series? Or
yeah, all those concepts were from the 90s series. You know, they did carry over into the new one also. But, you know, it's, like I said, it's got some great, you know, some really, like, ridiculous, silly puns. I'm trying to remember. I think there was a guy named Manuel Dexterity. I mean, like, literally, you know. But then there's also these, like, sort of crazy, like, homunculi, these, like, things that are these monsters that attack him, and they're created out of the, they're haunted by the ghost of insects that died while trapped between windows.
No
way. And so
way.
That makes them incredibly, like, angry and fierce. You know, they're just these, like, little, like, surreal touches that are, like, alternately funny and terrifying. The guy's one of my favorite writers, John Roslin, and this book was just so strange. He's also the guy who helped to, I believe, they also restarted Static Shock with the new 52.
Yeah.
And he's writing that also.
So, okay. And did you read the 52 relaunch at all, or did you?
No, I haven't. Done the 52 thing. You know, I might take a look at Static Shock since it's him.
Yeah.
But, and we all know that, you know, creators are the ones that drive, not the characters.
Yeah.
Anymore.
Yeah. It's interesting because I do a search with Zombie with an X, and the only thing I come up with is this comic called Zombie Reanimated, which is not it, obviously. It's a DC comic. I remember the Milestone thing.
It's without an E at the end.
Oh, without an E at the end. That's probably it.
It's got an I. It's
X-O-M-B-I. Here we go. I found it. Awesome. Yeah, the thing I remember about this, I never collected it, but I was always interested in it. I remember John Byrne drew one of the ads for it back in the day in the 90s, and it was such an, to me at the time, such an awesome, you know, piece of art for me because I was a John Byrne fan, and I was like, what is that? Oh no, he drew the first cover.
Right.
First cover image, yeah. And it says, hard to believe, harder to kill. And he's all bloody and messed up, and there's bullet holes. And, yeah, I remember that John Byrne cover.
The one that you're thinking of, the Zombie Reanimated, was the relaunch that they were doing before they got canceled again with the 52.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. So there's Zombie Reanimated?
Reanimated was actually just the tagline under the first issue. It was called Zombie for the second run.
But it has an E at the end of it. Zombie. No, this is something different, I think, Paul.
Okay.
Because it looks like a cartoon book, Zombie Reanimated. I don't know what that is.
Okay.
But, oh, man. Yeah, I wonder if you could find those on eBay or do they have them in trade at all, I wonder?
I doubt that they're in trade, but they you know, if you go to the, it hasn't been terribly long since it's been canceled. You can probably find the issues of the most recent series, right now.
It looks like there's a paperback Zombie, but it looks like it might be the 52 sort of thing. I'm sure somewhere you can find, if you look hard enough, but, oh, wow. So how did this concept escape me, especially with my love of horror and zombie movies? It's how did I not? Oh, I'm going to have to track that down. More comics to read. All right, Corey, what's your number three?
My number three is Freeway by Mark Kalsnico.
Uh-huh.
Kalsnico.
Yeah.
This is a large, thick book. Being denizens of Los Angeles, we will be able to relate to this a lot and, in fact, see a lot of familiar landmarks And it's just a great, really interesting book. It really takes you through. I don't think I've ever seen something depict the horrors of being stuck in traffic so accurately as this book.
Really?
It's really good at like tracking movements. And the guy's got, again, is another person that comes from animation, so that's probably why. But you can really, but it's really lushly illustrated. Although his character, he's sort of like a dog head, a simple cartoon dog head, but everybody else looks human.
Uh-huh.
And it's a bit stream of consciousness where while he's waiting in traffic, his mind sort of wanders and he's just recently gotten a job at an animation studio that he's always wanted to work at. And they don't explicitly name it, but it's pretty obvious that it's probably Disney.
Uh-huh.
And his mind kind of wanders back to kind of the golden age of Disney animation and what it must have been like to work then. And so you have these flashback scenes of kind of the original team of animators.
Hmm.
And then he comes back to the present, and then he goes to work, and you see like the infighting and the politics and how it's, you know, he's like, he gets his dream job and it's not the dream. Like it just does not live up to what he always hoped for. And at the same time, he's dating this woman, and you know, you see him with his struggles with that, and it's just interesting the way he does it. And he keeps having these flashbacks to him as a child watching TV,
uh-huh.
like in the 60s, and it's just, like, it's very stream of consciousness, and so sometimes you're not exactly sure where or when you are, but it's so wonderfully done that it doesn't matter. I mean, it's just, you just are kind of being carried through this journey.
Yeah,
and it's funny at times, and it's kind of poignant, and it's set, you know, it's interesting as far as kind of a Los Angeles history kind of way. You know, you see him flash back to certain periods, and then there's this weird subplot of this dark car that's following him around down the freeway with that wants to kill him or something, and then, you know, so there's a lot of like weird little side things that are just kind of like, where is this going? And you just have to keep reading to find out.
Yeah, there's a whole article on it on Robot 6, and they have pages on it. It looks really cool. I'm looking at the pages, and the artwork is, it's very nice. I like it a lot. It's very different.
Yeah.
There's a lot of like, there's not a ton of action happening, but it's very animated. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Right.
I like it. It's very nice. I'm
looking at one of the covers that has the, you know, sitting in traffic thing, and it actually makes me think about commuting, and that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, he does capture that feel.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. There's even a woman doing makeup in the car. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. Pass Avenue, Burbank. I mean, come on. That's my commute right there. That is my morning commute, like going past Burbank. Pass Avenue by Warner Brothers. Yeah, this has got to be. Yeah, and then the temperature and the autos. That's the. I'm looking at a panel. That's the Toyota dealership right there. Yeah. Okay. This is totally. Yeah. It's got to be either Disney or Warner Brothers or wherever he worked at. But
yeah,
it looks great. I'm gonna have to pick this up as well. That's a really looks like a really cool kind of like slice of life book. But
yeah. It is. It's slice of life, but there's a bit of, you know, he plays with it a little bit.
Yeah. And I like how he's a dog.
Yeah.
Everyone else is human, but he's a dog. I mean, that's just cool. It's just different. Oh, wow. Freeway. Cool. I'm going to have to check that out.
I guess he's done a number of books with that character, with that dog character, which is basically him.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess. And.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. I got you.
This is the only one I've read, and I could follow it fine. There's no sort of what he's, you know.
Nice. Well, my third book, and this is quite honestly one of my, well, I don't know if this one is, but this creator is, so mine is kind of a little bit of a cheat, but because I'm saying like anything by this creator, but his current series right now that's being put out through Viz is 20th Century Boys.
Oh.
And it's Naoki Urasawa's 20th Century Boys, and this guy is quite honestly has to be of all time, one of my favorite creators of all time. Like, quite literally, one of my favorite comic book creators. He's in the top five for me at this point, because I've read his book Monster, and I've read his book Pluto, all through Viz, and this guy's storytelling is absolutely dead on. I mean, do not be intimidated by this guy, or do not be scared off because it's manga, because, you know, the character drawings are, you know, they're very manga. No, I wouldn't say very manga. They remind me of Miyazaki a little bit, but his backgrounds and his storytelling are so beautifully done. He just keeps the story moving. And this particular book that's still being put out consists of, and this is going to freak some people out, but like, it looks like it's going to be 22 books in total. I'm up to the 12th book right now. You can get them on Amazon for about $10 or a little less than that. But I'm up to 12, and I stopped at 12 because I wanted to wait till the rest of the series was out, because the way I read his other book, Monster, they were all out. And so I was able to pick them up like bang, 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 one after the other. And for me, it's sort of better to read his stuff that way, because it seems like Viz is putting them out every other month, and you tend to not forget what happened before, but it doesn't stay fresh in your mind. So once the next 10 books come out, I'm literally going to go on Amazon and just buy them all at once. But this 20th Century Boys deals with, it's a little bit strange, but it deals with a group of kids sort of like who grew up together in a Stand By Me sort of way. And they play together every day. And the down and dirty of it, the really abridged version of the plot, is they all sort of imagine one day, like, what would happen, sort of how the world would end, or how there would be like a horrible attack like on Japan, and how it might play out. And what ends up happening is they all grow up and they grow apart, and one of them, you don't know who, through the course of the book, develops the plot and actually starts to, like, on New Year's Eve of 2000, you know, develop the plot and form a cult around this idea that they came up with when they were little boys. And it's much more complex than that. The characters, like, really go in and out and intertwine. And this guy is, if you've ever enjoyed, like, murder mysteries or mysteries in general, or things that are just interwoven and it takes a long time to figure out, this is it. And the guy is a master, just a master of just keeping the pace going and keeping the tension, you know, ratcheted, and of really great character development, you know, and he's just amazing to me. And if I ever met this guy, I think I would have to hug him, and I would, like, fall to my knees, because this guy, it just impresses me so much. Every time I read one of his books, I'm just like, wow, that's how it's done, man. Like, this is how it's done. And I've recommended Monster to people. And Pluto, I think, is only 5 or 6 books. And that was sort of his reimagining of Astro Boy. And he does a really good job with that. I just can't recommend this guy enough. And he's actually got a couple of series. I know that there's some... He's done a small chunk of work, but I know that there's a couple of series that are on the Scanslation sites. One of them was called Happy, and I don't have time to check those out. I just know that they exist. And there's another one called Billy Bat, which is really highly regarded, and those are on the Scanslation sites. But I think Billy Bat is the next one that's going to be published through Viz, and I'm going to check that out too. But I cannot, like, this guy is, I don't know, man, you know, like, there's people who are like Frank Miller and Alan Moore, and there's people that you go to every time and you just know. And for me, Naoki Urasawa, he's just it. And I know a lot of people might pick up these books and think, oh, it's manga, I don't know. But honestly, all you have to do, if you're picking up Monster, pick up the first 2 books and you're done. If you're picking up 20th Century Boys, pick up the first 2 books, because the first book of 20th Century Boys is a little weird with the way it plays with time, but by the second book, you're in all the way. And after that, you're just going to be sucked in, and I just can't recommend it enough.
I'm 4 volumes into 20th Century Boys, and it's great. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
I'd say if anybody, like,
It's a movie? It's a movie.
Yeah, it's a movie. It's a movie.
It's a series of movies, actually.
Yeah. I think there might be like three or four, but the graphic novel, obviously, they've been done in Japan for a while. They're coming out in the U.S., and I don't even think book 21 or 22. I've been waiting to pick up the movies until I'm done with the books, again, because I don't want anything spoiled. And I guess a lot of people don't have problems with that, but I do. I just want to read the whole thing. And, yeah, it's a movie, and the plot is really engaging, and it just keeps you going. There's definitely a series of events that happen, like maybe through books 10 through 12, that get a little bit like, oh, okay. But then he pulls it out again, and you're just like, oh, wow. He's just really, really good. And if you're intimidated by Monster, the amount of books in Monster and 20th Century Boys, pick up Pluto, because it reimagines Astro Boy as a murder mystery. And he sets it in the future, and it's just great. Even if you've never picked up Astro Boy, which I never had, I'd always been curious to see what Astro Boy is, and you know, but I'd never. It always looked like a little bit too like kidsy for me, like kiddie. But Pluto, that's the book that you got to check out, because that that's only like I said, five or six books, and they're probably like $10 each on Amazon, and. Yeah, that to me, highest recommend. Oh, it looks like there's 7 books, sorry, of Pluto, but it's the highest recommendation possible. I can't recommend it high enough. The guy's amazing. So that's my third book.
I would say, for people that liked Lost, probably like 20th Century Boys.
Oh, yeah, big time. Or for people who like the Fugitive type of thing, pick up Monster, because Monster is amazing. Monster is just like, you will be sucked in, you know. And the thing about this guy is that he's not, it's about the central character, but it's more about the people around the central character. I don't know how he does it, but he fully develops almost everyone in the plot. It's amazing. It's amazing. And I don't know that I've ever seen anything like it in comics. You know what I'm saying? Where almost every character is given life and breath and a point of view. And no matter how small they are, you identify with them. And I'm just very impressed.
There was one chapter where it's about this police officer that I don't think was even seen until that point. That's investigating the case. He just appears in that one chapter, and you just between the conversation between him and the officer that's taking over, because he's retiring.
Yeah,
their conversation, it's just like, wow, this is a real person. You know, it's so rich, such a rich world that he does create.
Yeah. And there's a lot of there's just a lot of heart to it too. You know what I'm saying? It's not cold. It doesn't come across like there's some manga and just comics in general where you don't like, you fall in love with the characters, even the bad guys. You're just like, oh man, they're so full of life. You know what I mean? And I can't think of another comic that's just been able to pull that off. So, yeah, Corey, you got to keep up with that. I know it's hard because there's so many books. But once I got sucked into him, he's another guy, just like this guy, Brom Revell, Gorillaz. I will pick up anything. I'll just I don't care what it is. I'm going to pick it up. So, yeah, big time. So that is my third book. So do you guys have any kind of runners up or anything or any like cheats that you want to sneak in or no, or are we just done at three?
I will stick with three.
Yeah.
But you know, there are more, you know.
There's definitely more.
I'll hold off for now because I think that you know, I don't want to blow everything at once.
Yeah.
I'm looking back at my bookshelf and there's like, you know, 15 things I could grab.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I just want to mention, because I just finished reading it and it was going to be in the top three, but is A Drifting Life. I don't know if you guys have heard about this.
Yeah.
And it's a really beautiful book about sort of the history of manga in Japan, and somebody who's a pro or grows up to be a pro in that area, and it deals us all kind of being artists in our own way. It really speaks to a lot of the artist's experience, like frustration with kind of wanting making your own voice and dealing with the structure of the way things are and wanting to be able to change your stature in life. It's a really beautiful book, and I just finished that, and so I'm just sneaking that one in. I'm cheating, but so anyway, so great. So we are done for this week, and this has been another Part-Time Fanboy. Check us out at parttimefanboy.com. Check out Corey Blake at comicsobserver.com, and hopefully we will be here again next week. Thanks for joining us. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Part-time.